Today on Wings, our reporter in Mombasa, Diana Wanyonyi, interviews Eunice Adhiambo, an activist who has the challenging task of pursuing community and economic development during Kenya's pandemic restrictions.
Whenever we had activities, we were expected to provide masks. So we trained women on how to make masks. And instead of buying surgical masks for our participants, we would buy the reusable masks that have been made by our women. So in the end, they also get something from our activities.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Mombasa has the second highest rate of COVID infections in Kenya, but still very much lower than in the big city Nairobi. From March till late August, the reported figures were 56% of cases in Nairobi, 7% in Mombasa, and in most of the poorest areas, very few cases at all. The spread was curbed in part by the government's prompt ban on travel, imposition of a curfew, and school closures. All of these measures have had drastic effects on economic activity. Diana Wanyonyi encountered Eunice Adhiambo in a crowded location that was rather noisy, but soon they moved to a quieter place.
My name is Eunice Adhiambo. I work at Levite Foundation as the program's coordinator. Levite Foundation is a community organization. It's actually been registered as an NGO. It's an organization that is supporting local communities, especially resource-dependent communities in Kilifi and Kwale County. So currently we are supporting small organizations to build their institutional capacity so that they are able to deliver their mandate to improve the livelihood of the communities within their catchment areas.
So you also work with women?
We work with women a lot. In fact, they are our primary target groups because, like I said, we support communities to improve their livelihoods. And you'll find that most community organizations that we support are either women groups or youth groups or conservation groups, which mostly you'll find the membership predominantly being women.
So what are some of the impacts of COVID-19 to women in coastal Kenya?
Okay, in the coastal Kenya, you'll find that COVID-19 affected different age sets of women differently. If I start with the younger women, and those are school girls, you realize that since March, they have not been in school. So having not been in school, and coastal parents kind of had left the responsibility of parenting to teachers. So these girls are at home. The parents don't know what to do with them. We've seen these children being defiled. You know, when you sleep with a child, whether it's consensual or you forced her or you coaxed her, it's defined as defilement because they're below the age of 18. So we've seen a lot of defilement of young girls. We've seen teenage pregnancies. We've seen infection as a result of the defilements. We've also seen these girls who depended so much on the supplies in school, like sanitary towels and so on, engaging in prostitution as a result of COVID-19.
Sex work.
Then we have the older, the middle-aged women, or the young women and middle-aged women. This is the population that actually feeds this country. Many of them do casual work. And if you look around Mombasa, you'll find that the women who do professional work that may not have been affected by COVID-19 like us are very few. We have women who are either working in some shop, women who are either working in some restaurant, women who are doing casual job in other people's houses, who have lost their jobs as a result of the government directives to frustrate the infections of COVID-19. So we have a lot of massive job losses. Other than massive job losses, we've seen incidences of sexual and gender-based violence. Marital rape has gone up. Because when you tell these people to be at home, some of these women, going out of the house was the rescue. So when you tell them to work at home, and when we were interviewing some of them, they would explain this so painfully. Like, this man is here. He's always calling me to the bedroom, and you know you can't refuse because you are their wife. They even tell you you're refusing, but this is what brought you to my house. You know, things like that. So marital rape has gone up. They found some relief when they could go out of the house to work, but now they're confined with the abuser in the same house. So this has gone up. We've seen cases of outsiders who are also raping women, sexually molesting women, who are not within their households. That has gone up as well.
Can you elaborate more on that?
Yes, we have men who are now idle in the villages or in the mitas, and many of them are abusing drugs. They're just there, drinking their cheap liquor and all that, you know. When you pass in a neighborhood on foot, you'd hear them, you know, throwing these really unkind words, really obscene words. So this has gone on. I think people are just, people are just idle. So as a result, you know, they just engage in those vices. So women have suffered a lot from that as well. Then we have the older generation of women. Again, for them is we have job losses, but we also have decline in income. If you are working throughout the night, you had a business that you are working throughout the night. Now you can't work throughout the night. And this group, you'll find artists. We have artists. We have people who run restaurants. We have people who depended on tourism. They've all lost income. They get a little, but not as much as they used to get. So you know, when income goes down, the stress levels in the houses have also... So even physical violence in the home has also gone up. And somehow, women take the burden. It's easy for a father to walk out on a hungry child, but it's very difficult for a woman to walk out on an angry child. So you have to find a way of dealing with the situation somehow. So I think COVID-19 has really, really, really affected women.
And what about these women who are working near the borders like Taveta, Lungalunga, between Kenya and Tanzania, between Kenya and Uganda, who are doing business?
Yes, they have lost some of them have lost their jobs completely, but some have found a creative way of doing this. We interviewed women in Diani who get their goods from across the border from Tanzania. So what happens is that their goods are sent as parcel. They use the courier companies, the inter-country courier companies, to bring their goods. But they claim the quality is not as they would have wanted, because you don't have the luxury of going to choose what you want. You know, you just order and then it's brought to you. So business for them has also gone down. We've visited women in Vanga. Vanga is at the border, the Tanzanian border on this side, and then women in Taveta. Again, they're also suffering from a lot of stigmatization by our Tanzanian counterparts. For them, they have no corona. Yeah, they claim they have no corona. Not that they don't have corona. They just decided to be indifferent about it. So they don't test. They don't have stringent rules like we do. But corona is there. So every time our women try to engage with them, their authorities are really, really stigmatizing local women, throwing them out.
From Kenya?
Yes, from Kenya. You're stigmatized, seriously. So they no longer want to deal with them because they say, we have corona. We also have these women who are sexual workers. For them, the sex was their source of income. And they engage in this at night. Now we have
curfew.
So they can't go out of their houses. Many of them have even relocated back to upcountry because no job, it means you have no money, you have children at home, they're no longer going to school, but they're at home.
Mm-hmm.
So they have all these, they've completely lost income, mm-hmm. and it's threatening their livelihoods as well.
And what is your organization doing to help these women?
Okay, our organization, at the beginning of the pandemic in Kenya, that was around March and April, we mobilized resources through different sources. We had an initiative called JALI. This is an initiative that a group of civil society organizations came up with. And JALI was just appealing to Kenyans able to spare a few coins to contribute through M-Pesa. And we were able to reach almost 700 families with food. By then, we thought that the pandemic will not take long, probably take a month or two, and we are done with. So, of course, the help we gave has been exhausted by now, but we tried to do a lot of that, just mobilizing support for them. So when we realized that this pandemic was going to be here longer, we attempted to do something else. Because from the study we did, we also realized that the next pandemic would be food insufficiency. It would actually be hunger pandemic, because due to corona, people were not able to be productive. So we will end up with very, very many hungry families. So what we have been doing is mobilizing resources to do livelihood projects. So we've been training women to acquire skills, to develop products. Like currently in Kwale, what we are doing is we have this indigenous technology that women already have. For instance, I'm working with culinary artists, you know, women who can do food and snacks, coastal foods and snacks. We have mabuyu, we have achari, we have things like masala sticks, crisps and all this. So we are supporting them to package their products well and marketing these products in supermarkets and other regions beyond the coast, so that they are able to get a little more from the food that they just know how to make. So that's what we've been doing at the moment. I know there are other people doing other things. We did masks for a while, and then people forgot how to wear a mask. Now people are wearing masks again. I think we should do it a little bit more. So we trained women on how to make masks. So
how many women?
Making masks, we trained 70 women, and this were in Mombasa, on how to make masks. And then we were buying the masks from them. Because whenever we had activities like civil society organizations, we were expected to provide masks. So instead of buying surgical masks for our participants, we would buy the reusable masks that have been made by our women. So in the end, they also get something from our activities. Yes.
How many masks were they producing per day?
One woman would produce at least 100. That's in 24 hours. Yeah.
So they were working 24 hours.
You organize yourself as much as you can make. Because what we were doing, we were giving them orders. We were taking orders from our partners. Then we were giving them orders. They were organized in groups, you know, in their women groups. So you give them orders. So you can give them an order of 500 masks. And you give them like 2 days to produce. So I don't know how they would organize themselves, but they would deliver 500 masks in those 2 days because we need them for a workshop. And they know if we do, they don't deliver the mask, we'll buy surgical masks, so they will lose. And the surgical masks, ironically, were cheaper than the cloth masks that we were buying from them. Yeah, so we were doing this just to support them. And since it was a funded initiative, we were okay with that.
On Wings, you're listening to Diana Wanyonyi in Mombasa, Kenya, interviewing Eunice Adhiambo, Programs Officer of the Levite Foundation, a nonprofit working mostly with women on Kenya's south coast.
Okay, apart from helping these women to get food through M-Pesa, that is a mobile funding in Kenya, what else are you doing?
At the moment, what we are doing in South Coast, for instance, right now I'm working with Wasini women groups. There's another group in Vanga, and then there's another group in Shimoni. So for these groups, they already were doing things. No, they were already engaging in ecotourism, they were already engaging in food production, but their problem was now we have no tourists coming, so there is no income for them. So what we've been able to do is to help them market their products beyond just waiting, sitting in their locality and waiting for tourists to come to them. We are helping them now get out of that place, you see, like bring them to Diani, for instance, where the town is active, there are few tourists in the hotels, and they can sell their goods there other than wait for them to go to Wasini, which they may need to do with the current lockdowns we are hearing in our targeted tourists' origins.
Okay, which products are you talking about?
I'm talking about things like Vikoi products, these traditional local fabrics. They make garments from the local fabrics. They make shorts. They make mats. They do a lot of weaving local Swahili mats. They carve. We have some very nice carvings that have been made by women. We have ornamental products, beads that have been made by women. We have house furnishings. Or like curtains, you know, that have been made by women. We have kitchen utensils that have been made by women. So there are a lot of products that were just gathering dust there, yet they can be brought to the market and be sold.
These women, are they sensitized? Are they aware about the impact of COVID-19 in their lives?
Yeah, of course they do. They understand COVID-19 because amongst them, there are also community health volunteers. Community health volunteers is a movement, so you have them in every village. So the community health volunteers have sensitized them on COVID-19, the different government directives on COVID-19, what the infection looks like, what it can do to you and all that. So that they understand.
So far, how many women have lost their lives
to COVID?
Yes. According to the statistics that you have in your office?
In the country, we have not disaggregated the statistics. But as far as I'm concerned, none of the women we work with, our target areas, we have lost no woman at the moment. Yeah. Actually, the statistics in Kwale have remained very, very low. Yeah.
You also work with women in Kwale, in fishing industry.
Yes.
And now, due to the curfew,
yes,
that was imposed by the Kenyan government,
yes,
what is the impact of COVID-19 to these women who are doing fishing?
Okay. The fisheries industry was affected at the beginning.
Yes.
Then the curfew was blanket. But as time progressed, fishermen were allowed. They were exempted from the curfew and they were allowed to go fishing at night. So they've continued getting their fish stocks. However, we had the inter-county, the county specific lockdowns where someone from Kwale would not cross to Mombasa. And some of these women do not just do fishmongering. Some of these women do value addition to fish, and once they've added value, they take this fish to other counties. So their business was greatly affected because they could not move to those other counties. They cannot rely on courier services because they are very expensive. And sometimes we say business depends on the participation of the owner. So if you don't participate in your business, sometimes things would go wrong. So their businesses have gone down, but not so much. They're still able to do business. What we've also done for them, we've been supplying them with cooler boxes to ensure that their fish can last a bit longer because of the curfew that is there. And we have trainings on value addition that would try to ensure that their fish would stay a bit longer and reach a wider market.
Do you think it's time for the Kenyan government to provide a free toll number for women and young girls to call or maybe to report this gender-based violence during this COVID-19 period?
I don't think it's necessary because we already have platforms where women can report issues. The problem is these platforms must be publicized so that women know we have these platforms that we can go to when we have these cases. For instance, we have gender desk. We have a police station in every area. There's a police station. In every police station, we have a gender desk that deals directly with issues related to gender, issues related to women, and you'd go there and you'll be helped. People do not know. We have many civil society organizations that are also receiving these cases. What we do when they land to us, like I do not do gender-based violence cases, but I have partners like Teresa who do gender violence cases. I receive them, then I refer. So that also happens. So people should just know where to take these cases. So we are not short of places to report these cases. Yeah. So a toll number may just be another platform. And people would need gadgets to do that and all that. Yeah, we should publicize the sources, the platforms we already have, so that people know they are there and they are working. And there are always people there ready to listen to.
Do you think security personnel is doing enough to help women and young girls during this COVID-19 pandemic to protect their rights?
They're doing something, they're not doing enough. They're doing something, but they're not doing enough. What they are doing, I would want them to be a little bit more proactive, because what they are doing is reactive. So they wait for you to go and report. Sometimes they are not even helpful when you report. We know of cases that have been, that have been interfered with because of police. For instance, there's a case I'm handling in Kilifi. A six-year-old girl was defiled by a neighbor who is also. I think 16 or 17, and thereby a minor as well. So the 16-year-old disappeared from the home because he feared violence. People would mob him and kill him. He feared
stigma.
He feared arrest. So he disappeared. So the defiled girl. The case was also reported to the same police station. Now we've been following up. The police is telling us they are looking for a minor who is lost, the defiler, So they've put a lot of emphasis on that one that is lost. And this one, because you're already helping that one, you've cancelled her. They don't think she still needs justice, So sometimes they reason in a way that you fail to understand. They place importance where it's not there. But I also think that someone is trying to interfere with the cases. So we have issues of corruption in our police force. We have issues of ignorance. They really do not understand the magnitude of what they are dealing with. We have issues of stigma. You go there, they stigmatize you. So we have all these issues around there. They are doing something, but not enough. There are police women who are doing very, very good work. Like when you go to Malindi police station, there's Corporal Mariam there doing a great job. She has been awarded several times for doing a splendid job. But there are some police stations that I'll not mention who are a bit disappointing. What I can add is that we can fight this pandemic. We have fought more serious issues than COVID-19. If only Kenyans would understand the magnitude of the problem we have and agree to deal with this. It's very simple. Can we keep our social distancing? Can we observe hygiene? Can we wear our masks so that we frustrate more infections, so that we don't have more infection? Then we can continue with our lives like our neighbors. Tanzania has just had their elections. We are tired. We are really tired. I know people are tired. But let's observe these rules so that we can frustrate these infections in the shortest time possible and we continue with our lives.
Okay. Lastly, the Kenyan government has added more days or has extended the curfew. As a human right defender, do you think it's the right thing to do?
Yes and no. Yes, in the sense that somehow we have to frustrate the infection because it got to a point Kenyans thought the pandemic is gone. and they let off their guard. People are no longer wearing masks. People were engaging in, close relation activities. For instance, if you go to a pub at 4, you'll find seats put a meter away. Give those people an hour or two. Once they are tipsy, there's no social distancing. People would be hugging, people would be dancing together, And this has increased. We've seen what has happened. There's been an upsurge of infections. So it's a good thing that this is restricted for a short while, and then until we see the cases going down. However, we also have these people who depend on these restaurants, including waiters, the owners, and so on. Before just pronouncing a blanket curfew on Kenyans, the government should have had at least some incentives, some alternatives for these people. So what would the waiters do? If you say they are working up to 9, it means an establishment that would work with 4 waiters can do with 2. Yes, it means 2 of them would lose their job because the income that is coming is also not enough. We have artists who perform in these clubs. They perform at night. It means they're no longer performing. So what do you do with all this? So my take as a human rights defender is that when you restrict a right, when you're restricting a right, you should provide alternatives to this. Otherwise, you'll be violating another right, and that's what they're doing. We are violating people's rights to economic development. We are violating people's rights to survival as we protect one right. So we've given one right a lot of priority and forgotten that there are also other rights. A person may not die from corona, but there's hunger.
Eunice Adhiambo, Programs Officer of the Levite Foundation. Her job is managing economic development projects, mainly with women, on the south coast of Kenya, even while COVID and its attendant restrictions rage. The interviewer was Wings correspondent in Mombasa, Diana Wanyonyi. Since this interview was recorded, Kenya has reopened its schools and universities. More than 40% of the population are under the age of 15. Nearly 60% are younger than 25. The youthfulness of the population is said to contribute to above-average rates of survival and recovery from COVID. A concern that people living with HIV would be more vulnerable to COVID seems not to be the case. About 1.5 million people in Kenya are living with HIV, and nearly 900,000 are women. To hear more programs about women around the world, visit our website wingsradio.org/wordpress. Our daily news feed is at facebook.com/wingsradio. You can reach us by email, wings@wings.org. Wings thanks all our supporters, including your local community radio stations, Suzette Cullen and Genevieve Vaughn, whose online conference and seminars can be viewed at maternalgifteconomymovement.org. That's maternalgifteconomymovement.org. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle Is Cast. I'm Wings series producer Frida Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.